Harper Audio presents The Midwife of Hope River, a novel of an American midwife by Patricia Harmon, performed by Anne Whitman.
Most of my life I've felt I was dreaming. Now and then I wake up, sometimes for months, sometimes for minutes. I'm a character in a play, and I can't tell if I'm making it up or if a great puppeteer is making me dance. From the Private Diary of Patience Murphy, Midwife, Wild Rose Road, Liberty, West Virginia, USA, 1929 to 1930. Autumn. Chapter 1. Stillbirth.
How long do you think my baby's been dead?
Catherine turns toward me and I can tell she's still crying. 5 days, maybe less, I answer my patient. I heard the heartbeat when I checked you last Friday, and you said the baby moved during church. Shut your eyes now. Try. You need to rest. I place my new leather-bound journal on the maple table, lean my head back and gaze across the dark room. Fire crackles in the blue-tiled fireplace, flickers on the armoire, the canopy of the birth bed and the wallpapered walls. A watery image in the dressing table mirror catches my eye. It's me, a small woman with long auburn hair, a straight nose, and a round chin. Pretty enough, but not beautiful. I'm sitting at the bedside of Mrs. Catherine McIntosh, the wife of William, owner of the McIntosh Consolidated Mines. Yesterday was Black Tuesday. That's what they're calling it. Wall Street fell, and then I had to tell the McIntoshes that their unborn baby was dead. The crash, a faraway earthquake, rumbled even here in Appalachia, and I'm thankful I don't keep my money in the bank, not that I have any. As I desperately searched for signs of life in Catherine's womb, moving my wooden fetoscope over her round belly up and down and then across, a line of customers fought to get their money out of the First Mountain Federal in Liberty. The queue of men snaked down Chestnut and around the corner to Fayette, though any fool who strolled along Main and saw the closed shops should have known what was coming. When the coal mines begin to shut down in Union County, everything else does.
Hold me, patience. I'm so cold.
Catherine reaches for my hand and pulls me toward the bed. Mary Proudfoot, the McIntosh's cook, and her grown daughter, Bitsy, are asleep in their room by the kitchen, curled around each other like kittens. William McIntosh snores in his bedroom down the hall. This room is not chilly. It's Catherine's heart that is cold, knotted up like a chunk of ice thrown up on the banks of the Hope River. It doesn't seem proper for a midwife to sleep with her patient. But if I rest a few hours, what harm can it do? I'll need my strength to get us all through this. I breathe out a long sigh, carefully place my wire-rimmed glasses with the journal, kick off my slippers, move over to the bed, and fold myself around Catherine, giving her comfort where there is no comfort. Remembering Pittsburgh when, in the winter, I used to sleep with Mrs. Kelly and Nora. I'd like to tell this mother about my own stillborn baby, the one I carried when I was 16, the very same baby whose father died before he was born. But I can't add to her burdens. I pull the covers over Catherine's shoulder and put my arms around her as she sobs in her sleep. The loss of this child is all the sadder because her first son, not yet two, a little blonde boy just learning to talk, died of pneumonia last winter. Her contractions are mild and come every 10 minutes. Dream. At 6:30 a.m., as light crawls under the heavy drapes illuminating the rose carvings on the tall maple armoire and the pattern on the red-flowered carpet, Catherine sits straight up in bed, her hand on her belly. I felt it, she says. I rub sleep from my swollen eyes, thinking she dreams. I'd listened for the sound of the infant's heartbeat with my wooden-horned fetoscope for a full hour yesterday as the room got quieter and Catherine's eyes rounder. There was nothing to hear but the rumbling of the woman's bowels. No tick, tick, tick of a baby's heartbeat. No baby kicks either. I'd even called for Dr. Blum. Tall, thin, hair thinning on top, and he listened for another 30 minutes. Still nothing. Catherine screamed when I first told her the baby was dead. And when the physician nodded agreement, patted her hand, and took her husband out of the room, she screamed again. The sound of that wail goes right to your heart.